So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Revolve.
Well, in the spirit of the holidays, I think it's important that everyone know that, well, prime time is sort of winding down as such. I mean, come January 11, you're going to see a brand new prime time. As a matter of fact, there won't even be a prime time. It won't be called prime time. Bobby the Brain Heenan, live from New York. It's going to be Monday Night Raw.
Whoa, wait a minute.
A new year and a new day.
Hold it. No more prime time?
Well, we only have two more shows prime time here, folks. So we're going to be tearing down the set and things of that nature, bringing you some of the best.
Prime time is over.
It's going to be in several
And weeks. The 11th starts the new show.
It's a brand new year. January 11th, Monday Night Raw, live from New York.
You don't understand something.
What?
That means I'm out of a job.
John Pollock here alongside Wei Ting. Wei, how are you doing on this fine Wednesday morning?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm in Montreal right now.
Wow. How do you sound so clear?
I don't know.
What are you doing in Montreal?
I'll be doing a number of things for the Fight Network. We are continuing to cover Olympic athletes. We're talking to a wrestler, a boxer, and maybe a fencer even.
A fencer.
Fencer as well. We're going to be shooting a Patrick Cote workout. He's coming back to the UFC coming up very soon. And also Instinct MMA.
Very, very exciting.
Smaller-ish MMA show.
What's interesting is that I believe it's almost at the exact same time that you are going to be talking to Patrick Cote, I'm going to be talking to Kung Lee.
Oh. It's wow, like no way.
Review Away is going to be on top of this fight at the same time, about the exact same things.
It's amazing. I bet people don't know this whole side of us, that we are so connected with the MMA world. And here they want us to stop talking about it.
Well, I don't have anything clever here.
No. Well, we don't have to talk about it. It's fine.
We're going to chat about Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
January the 11th of 1993.
Mm-hmm.
Was this a hard show for you to find? The last part, I had to watch some crappy feed of this Undertaker Damian Demento match where someone did the old recording their TV with the match on it.
Yeah, this show is easily you can easily find it on YouTube. But the WWE now, I suppose they don't take the whole thing off, but they just take maybe one part, like one part of six, they take it off just to
fuck with people.
Totally, yeah. I mean, I understand it. I guess it exposes your product.
Why don't they take all of it down?
I don't know.
There's so much WWE stuff on YouTube.
There is.
Like whole pay-per-views in one file.
Yeah, there is.
I don't want to jinx this because it's very handy for us, but at the same time, for the WWE, I mean, they crack down so hard on streams of their pay-per-views. They want to launch this network where their content is their biggest asset.
Yeah.
You would think that they would have a whole department dedicating their entire days to taking this stuff down and going after people.
Maybe they do have one. I know, though, that they're probably not as, working as hard at it as the UFC, because you can hardly find any UFC
footage. Is impossible to find. That is a crack staff right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, he probably spent a lot of money and effort.
Yep. Now, January the 11th of 1993, we never got Raw in Canada at this point. I don't believe we got it until around 1995 or so. It would air on the new VR.
Yes.
As I recall, out of Barrie, Ontario.
But not on Wednesday, or not on Mondays.
When did it air?
I don't know. I just never felt like Raw ever aired live until
I think it was like sporadic. There were very few times I believe it would air on the new VR live before they finally moved over to TSN, and it was on like
Wednesdays
for a while. Yeah, and then they moved it. they moved it around, and it wasn't until like the fall of 1998 that they got the Monday Night Live slot on TSN. And even then, it would get preempted a lot of times.
I remember that one show at the Sky Dome that when they did Raw at the Sky Dome, that didn't even air on the Monday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I do recall that. Yeah, it was really hard to be a WWF fan at that time, I thought, because you still got superstars. Superstars would always air on Saturday afternoons or whatever time. But Raw, to me, it was always, man, I just wanted to watch this show because it was always positioned as the top show for the company. And I was just, I mean, it's so easy now. I think people just take it for granted how easy it is to watch any show from any wrestling company. It's right here, just a few clicks away. But back then, you had to really work hard to follow this stuff.
Now we often complain about the hour delay on the score, but it was probably much worse back then.
Back then, it was a
2-day delay. We wouldn't be able to do this show.
It was not a complaint of too much. It was a complaint of too little wrestling on TV.
That is correct.
Underexposure, a major problem in professional wrestling.
What a time.
Even worse for the UFC at the time.
That's true. Yeah.
So here we go. From Manhattan, New York, at the Manhattan Center, the home now of Ring of Honor and their iPay-per-views.
That is correct.
This is this building is set up. There's a top floor and there's a bottom floor that Ring of Honor has run both floors. And I believe this was on the second floor. Isn't this the Hammerstein Ballroom as well? Isn't one of the levels the Hammerstein Ballroom?
I didn't know that they were the same building.
I think they are.
Okay.
Someone is going to correct me if they're not. But we started.
You know, in terms of wrestling history, that building really is quite significant. I mean,
oh yeah,
We often think about Madison Square Garden, of course, but the Manhattan Center. It's housed Raw, of course, ECW, Ring of Honor.
It's had some historic cards over the last 20 years.
I wanted to just bring some context into this. At the time, you talk about superstars, but what other properties did the WWE have at the time?
Well, they had a show called Primetime, which is what this became, with like a Monday night show on the USA Network, which was almost like a panel kind of show with Vince McMahon, and they'd have like Bobby Heenan and Mr. Perfect on, and they would occasionally shoot angles on that show, but it was very rare.
Hold on, so it was.
And then they'd throw to matches.
I never saw Primetime. Did they just talk?
I didn't really see it either.
They
did throw to matches and stuff like that. They had just launched this show that we saw highlights of on Raw called WWF Mania. And then they had Wrestling Challenge.
Yeah.
These were all like their syndicated properties at the time.
Everything was syndicated, right?
Yes.
This is their first foray into a network slot.
Yes.
Primetime network slot at that.
Yes.
Well, not counting main event, of course. Saturday night's main event.
Right. They would do those about four times a year, and I think they had pretty much stopped. Yeah, they had stopped Saturday night's main event by the time 1993 rolled along. So this was an interesting experiment at the time, if they could get people to tune in on Monday nights. And here we look at, 19 years later, and it's, Monday night is wrestling night.
Mm-hmm. I mean, traditionally, when was wrestling shown on TV?
Saturdays. Saturday was the big day. Saturday afternoons, I think, is what most people would associate professional wrestling with.
Now, why would they pick Monday of all nights?
I don't know what the decision process was. They had the time slot already.
Football wasn't around?
For prime time. No, Monday Night Football was still around.
I guess so. In January.
Yes, this would have started, actually, January 11th. This would have started right after the Monday Night Football season would have ended, because the Monday Night games always end kind of that first week of January, and then they go into playoffs.
Right, well, that makes sense. Sundays. That makes perfect sense.
It does make sense for a launch date. So at this time, what was going on in the WWF? This was just a few weeks before the Royal Rumble. Bret Hart was the WWF champion at this point, and they were building up to Bret Hart against Razor Ramon at that year's Royal Rumble. And were you a viewer of the WWF at this point?
I was, actually. This was about the time when I first started watching. I remember very vividly the build for Survivor Series of 1992 and how the Ultimate Maniacs were set to take on Ric Flair and Razor Ramon, but then something happened.
The Ultimate Warrior was fired.
Well, my 8-year-old self wouldn't have known that.
that he was using steroids against company policy.
What are steroids?
And him and the British Bulldog, these two big baby faces, were on drugs.
Right. Well, Ric Flair at the time was the champion. Am I correct?
In 92. That Survivor Series, we reviewed that one. It was just after Bret Hart had won the title for the first time.
That is right.
So Flair had lost the title to Bret at this point, and we start the show off with Sean Mooney, who is outside the show and is on the street, and Bobby Heenan shows up, and Mooney informs Bobby Heenan that he has been replaced on commentary by Rob Bartlett. What an insult here to the great Bobby Heenan.
Tell me, who is this Rob Bartlett?
An unfunny man who did wrestling for a brief period of time, and thank God he was replaced.
What was his full-time job?
He was a comedian. He worked on, I believe they mentioned it on here, he worked on WFAN in New York, a popular radio station on the Don Imus show. The man who is, I think, notorious for using the term nappy-headed hoe.
That's right. You can see where some of the influence came from on Rob Bartlett here in this first opening match.
Oh, Jesus. This guy was horrendous. I don't know how he got through an audition or a trial period. He was terrible.
He was awful.
This guy, I would listen to Art Donovan over Rob Bartlett.
Oh, any day of the week. I would listen to Booker T. I would listen to Mark Madden over this guy.
This was atrocious announcer. This guy lasted, I looked this up, he lasted until April. Holy Christ.
That's that same stubbornness. Look at how long Booker T's been around.
My God. So they do the opening theme, and this was back when Raw, they'd have this annoying alarm that would go out throughout the arena. It was like the Right to Censor theme, but it was to signal chaos, and everything is Raw. Mm. They were really big on the word Raw when they launched this show because they kept trying to work it in with crappy jokes. It's like, oh, we're Raw. We're uncut.
Uncooked.
Uncooked. We're literally Raw. We're like chicken right out of the package. Imagine if they had called this show Salmonella. Do you think the Raw would have had the run it would have if it, welcome to Monday Night Salmonella.
Hmm.
No?
I don't think so.
Not quite?
No.
Oh, that was what they were trying to push here. Vince McMahon is with Rob Bartlett and Randy Savage as Rob Bartlett is looking forward to Yokozuna. Yokozuna.
Yeah. That was the other thing about this Rob Bartlett.
Is that a camera lens?
could be a Japanese camera. The other thing about Rob Bartlett, of course, aside from being incredibly obnoxious,
Didn't
know anything about wrestling.
He was asking who was who. Not like the Usos. He was asking which one is Rick Steiner and which one is Scott Steiner.
Mm-hmm.
Holy Christ, did he make this product look just like no one would care here. This guy had no idea. I don't care what exposure this guy has on a morning radio show in New York. Anyone who tuned into this was tuning out immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Our first matchup was Coco Beware against Yokozuna with Mr. Fuji. And Coco Beware comes out, and Rob Bartlett asks, whatever happened to Gary Coleman? They are both black, you see. Yokozuna comes out, and Rob Bartlett asks, or states, that this guy has no fly zone. And Vince laughs heartily at this observation.
Vince's fake laugh.
Yokozuna was later referred to as one big-butted Oriental, has an ass like an amphitheater, to which Savage and Vince sell how vulgar the word ass is. Oh, I guess we're Raw. We just said ass. This was so lame. And Vince asks where Frankie is, and they suggest that maybe Yokozuna had a snack in the back. He ate the bird. Coco goes for a bunch of shoulder blocks, pretty much just bumps for Yokozuna. Yoko drops himself onto the top rope and takes a leg drop, and then Yokozuna back splashes him into the corner and hits the bonsai drop. 347. Pretty much a squash match here. The matches
literally
on this show were pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Pretty forgettable. This was like a... I would say a step above your typical edition of the superstars at the time, but not by much.
No, no. This was very much cookie cutter of the formula of the TV shows at the time, down to the comedic segment starring Bobby the Brain Heenan.
They had a ring card girl.
Oh, yeah, they sure did.
I wonder if she was heckled here by this audience.
I don't... Oh, like Britney was.
Like Britney was. I was just going to tell you that story, but yeah. You have heard it.
I've heard it on the Road Trip podcast, a very entertaining podcast.
That was an audience. Yeah. I've never sat with a crowd that unruly before.
Oh, you've... maybe
Jersey wrestling, or Jersey fight fans.
You haven't been to enough UFCs, I bet, all around the world.
Oh, if I never go to Atlantic City again, it'll be too soon.
This woman had hair that looked like, I don't know, like an explosion.
Like she was in an 80s music video.
Yeah.
With Van Halen.
With just like poofy hair.
A lot of hairspray here. Yeah. Then they had a taped interview with Bobby Heenan teasing Narcissus.
Narcissus is as they called it. Narcissus.
Not the narcissist. It was Narcissus.
Yeah.
Comparing Mr. Perfect to him, said it's like comparing ice cream to horse manure, and says that when Narcissus debuts, you will think he is from another planet. Big tease here for the Royal Rumble. The debut of Narcissus.
That is
that
right.
The worst ring name you've ever heard?
No, I'm sure I could come up with worse that have occurred before. But
sounds like an injury you suffer.
Narcissus.
Okay. Come down with Narcissus.
What was the deal? Were they not able to mention Luger's name, or
they didn't want to? It was much like they wanted to create a character rather than bill him as Lex Luger was a performer in the other organization. We're going to bring him in with a brand new character without his name,
despite this guy being one of the top baby faces in the other company.
They're in a different universe, way. This is the WWF.
Right. And at what point did he actually become the narcissist Lex Luger?
He became the narcissist pretty quickly, as I recall. I think they dropped Narcissus pretty quickly. And then it was later in the summer when he did the babyface turn that they just gave up and called him Lex Luger.
Mm.
The gimmick really did not take off.
No. No, it didn't.
Shockingly. We go to the Steiner brothers against the Executioners, who may or may not have been Stan Stansky and another random jobber.
Maybe their fathers.
Yes, maybe. Steve Stansky.
Masked jobbers, basically. And I love them. I love masked jobbers.
I love the idea of two mystery men who must hide their identities and walk around like ninjas.
Exactly. And these masks, they put no effort into them. They're basically cloth, like just black cloth over a dude's head.
Bartlett doesn't know here who Rick or Scott is, and Randy Savage seemed annoyed here at this man and his lack of preparation. They show Doink in the audience.
This is the same team that worked with Art Donovan. Is it not?
Oh, God, yeah. Savage has had some real big sandbags in his time.
Oh, Gorilla and Savage, that's right.
Doink was in the audience. This was when this clown would just randomly show up at events in the crowd. WWF was terrible at this time.
Oh,
folks.
Doink was cool. Nothing wrong with Doink.
There was some horrible stuff. Like, and believe me, this was part of my childhood, folks, and I think I'm looking at this with an honest point of view. There was some terrible stuff.
You're comparing here Doink to Max Moon, okay?
I always loved Doink. Max Moon. I thought his outfit was real cool. I loved his entrance where he shot the pyro out of his wrists.
Oh, God.
Like Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Max Moon from the moon.
Oh, why didn't he get over? Well, we'll get to that.
Scott here, he hits a tilt-a-whirl slam. Rick comes in with a big clothesline. They just murder these executioners. And Vince starts plugging Mitch Ferratt of the Buffalo Bills is coming to the WWF. I don't know who this man is, a football player of some sort. Scott hits a big overhead belly-to-belly suplex and then a double underhook suplex. And then Steiner puts one of the executioners up onto his shoulders, and Rick hits a bulldog off of the shoulders, and the Steiner brothers get the win. Another squash match here, and the Steiners just destroying some poor guys.
Yeah, not much to say about these.
Sean Mooney is outside the arena, and it's all cold outside, and A woman in drag shows up trying to get inside, claiming to be Rob Bartlett's aunt, but then the wig comes off and it's Bobby Heenan dressed in drag, trying to get into Raw. What lengths will this man go to get into Raw, making this feel like a hot, must-see show? And I think the whole audience was saying, let him in! Kick out Bartlett.
Yeah. I guess this is a quality of the wrestling of this era. Just really cheesy, low-budget, campy comedy. Way worse, perhaps. And well, maybe not worse, actually. I'd probably take this over some of the comedy segments that I see today.
Then Vince is in the ring, and he welcomes out Razor Ramon in full heel mode, getting set for his title match against Bret Hart at the Royal Rumble. And McMahon says that Bret worked 8.5 years to become the champion, while you're just some Johnny-come-lately. And they replay the angle from WWF Mania, where Owen Hart is being interviewed, and Ramon attacks Owen and tells Vince that he squashed Owen like a cockroach.
Mm-hmm.
The cockroach. And said Bret cannot do anything about it, tosses his toothpick at McMahon. I really like this promo. This was Razor Ramon in full Al Pacino mode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, who doesn't like Razor Ramon? Just
he was really great here.
A very wrestling at this time was just all stereotypes, right? You know, you pick, you're either a Hawaiian, you're a cop, or a garbage man. But and this was a stereotype just as much, but a very unique one, you know? A guy deciding to play Scarface and just doing a very good job.
They plug the headlock on Hunger, with Tatanka cutting a promo for it, and then we had Bartlett make a joke about it in comparison to Yokozuna, who was not headlocked for Hunger. Vince had to inform Bartlett of who Tatanka was during this PSA.
Why? Why do you... And he has a track record of this. I mean, this guy, Art Donovan, Mike Adamly. Why hire all these people that don't give a shit about your show?
I didn't think it could get worse, but it did.
Yeah.
And that took us to the Intercontinental title match with Shawn Michaels, the champion at the time, defending against Way's favorite, Max Moon.
Mm-hmm. A guy who looks like a Sub-Zero crossed with the Michelin Man.
Yes. Was played by Conan for a period of time and then played by Paul Diamond for a while.
Do you know who it was in this?
I believe at this point it was Paul Diamond. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
But not 100%. Bartlett was just going crazy here. He made an Amy Fisher joke, who, for those not aware, was a 17-year-old who had sex with Joey Buttafuoco of celebrity boxing fame, who feuded with China. And Amy Fisher showed up at his home talking about it and confronted his then-wife about this and then shot her in the head. And then Joey Buttafuoco was charged with statutory rape.
Wow.
Fine humor here. And his jokes were so forced. So forced. He was like, still to come, we've got Amy Fisher, played by Sensational Sherry, and Joey Buttafuoco, played by Vince McMahon.
They just had nothing to do with anything. It was,
a joke that the mayor of New York, David Dinkins, would be in a match later on with someone. I just was like, shut up. I hated this guy. Hated him. Oh, God.
The Vince McMahon laugh.
Max Moon applied a hammer lock, and Michaels missed with a shoulder block into the corner. And Bartlett, they go to break and come back, and Bartlett says that Shawn Michaels pulled a knife on Max Moon during the break. To which Vince said, no, he did not. That's not true. He did not use a knife. And then we hit new lows, and we said that... They set up that Mike Tyson.
You notice right now, everybody, that we're not talking about this match at all. We're not talking about Shawn Michaels. This whole thing was taken over by Rob Bartlett.
They said that Mike Tyson was in prison watching this match. So our second reference to a rapist in this match alone. And then we hear Bartlett change his voice, and we do a fake phone call.
Hello, bitch.
Is that Mike? Is that you?
Yeah. Hi. How you doing?
That's Mike Tyson.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm in solitary confinement.
You're where?
I'm in solitary confinement.
Well, we're here at Monday Night Raw.
By myself, I might add.
Well, all right.
We used to have fun on dates, but now you're making license plates. Isn't that right, Mike?
We're two and almost a count of three. We certainly hope, Mr. Tyson, you're enjoying Monday Night Raw.
Oh, this is nothing. I see this kind of stuff in the mess hall every day.
Well, I don't know about that.
Hey, who's that on the screen now? Is that Oprah Winfrey?
No, there's no telling what you're going to see here on Monday Night Raw. That's Doink.
Doink?
During the match, as Rob Bartlett plays Mike Tyson, and Vince and Savage have to interview the fake Mike Tyson next to them. This was horrible. And
and it lasted forever. It lasted throughout the entire match.
They do this forever. Moon actually had a small package here that Michaels kicked out of. Not that it's important. Savage actually tells Tyson that he got a raw deal when he was sentenced to prison for rape. And Vince says, well, some people would disagree with that. They're just openly talking about rape here with Savage defending.
I think he wanted to work the word raw in.
Oh,
that's all.
Anyway, Michaels got catapulted to the floor. And then Moon came off the apron. We go back into the ring, hit a spinning heel kick to the corner on Michaels, and Michaels gets out of the way, hits a super kick, and then eventually a back suplex, which was his finish at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this was his finish in the Royal Rumble video game for Sega Genesis. He did not have the super kick. His finisher was the back suplex.
Wow, that is lame.
The sweet back suplex. And Sean gets the win here over Max Moon. The commentary just killed me here. I hate it so much.
It was so awful.
Terrible.
So awful.
Then Mooney is still outside, and there's people lined up, and he explains that there's people buying tickets for next week's show. And then an Orthodox Jewish man shows up, and it's Uncle Morty, who's related to Rob Bartlett, trying to get in. And it is Bobby Heenan in Orthodox Jewish attire.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Heenan unsuccessful in trying to break out.
Unsuccessful in making us laugh as well.
And then the main event, Damian Demento against The Undertaker.
Oh, before that, we had the Kamala beatdown.
Oh, this was not in what I saw.
Oh, God.
So when you describe this?
Well, it was just footage from primetime. And I guess Superstars, I mean, were Kamala in the ring with Kimchi and Whippleman.
They squeezed a lot into this 1 hour.
Yeah, Kimchi and Whippleman are about to attack him, and then Slick, of all people, come in to save Kamala.
Oh.
That was it. I guess my question about all this was that in comparison to the look of this Raw, Superstars was filmed in arenas. And at this time, was Superstars still their flagship show, or had they already converted to Raw at this time?
I mean, Superstars was still a very important show at the time. But that they would shoot like multiple shows at a time for Superstars. So you maybe do like 4 weeks worth of Superstars tapings at that point. But Raw, I think they were taping like maybe two at a time or something like that in a smaller venue. So Superstars to me was always still the big show because we didn't get Raw here. But they started shooting their big angles on Raw.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, Damian Demento against The Undertaker. And Bartlett is complaining that The Undertaker's pretty face is covered by his hair. It's too bad that this man isn't around today to call some of his WrestleMania classes.
I know.
Very unfortunate. He then referred to the urn Paul Bearer was holding as a martini shaker. Demento hit a few chops, then was sent face first into the mat. Undertaker hits the arm drag off the top rope, back before it was called old school. And they plug next week's Raw, featuring Papa Shango against a Red Rooster, Ric Flair against Tito Santana, and a Bret Hart interview. And Taker hit a tombstone, got the win. And the highlight of the show was they panned through the crowd to end the show, and we saw Vladimir in an IcoPro shirt.
Is that right?
Wearing the IcoPro shirt, WWF's failed supplement company. And that ended Raw. A atrocious start to the Monday Night Raw franchise. I hated this show. 0 out of 10. I didn't like anything on this show at all. Even with Shawn Michaels in a match. Rob Bartlett was one of the single worst commentary jobs in the history of professional wrestling. And this just felt like...
He says at one point, The Undertaker wears those gloves to avoid dishwash hands.
Oh, shut up! Oh, I hated him. I just hated him.
Oh, man.
Oh.
A very uneventful show. Basically, a Superstars episode. And as much as we complain about, you know, what WWE TV is like today, it's way better.
Dude, I was screaming for John Cena to come out and do comedy during this show.
Mm-hmm.
John Cena was fucking Joey Diaz in comparison to Rob Bartlett on this show. Oh, God, was he terrible. He was horrendous. Raw, folks. A real rough start to this franchise. So, what do you give this show, Wei?
I give this show, because of its length, 2.
A 2, just because it was short. I watched this morning, and I was very glad we only had a 1-hour show to watch, because I was exhausted after this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But that was Raw, and let's transition over to your feedback. Maybe you found a gem in this show, because I did not. And we start off with David Duffenberg. When you first said you were reviewing this episode of Raw, I instantly thought that I might have this on tape still. Sadly, the tape is unwatchable. Funny, the YouTube version is also unwatchable. And I couldn't give you some good 1993 commercial reviews as well. I watched this again online, and it was amazing how fast this went, even with the commercials edited out. Why can't Raw flow like this anymore? The wrestling wasn't top-notch, but the crowds were hot, and there wasn't a whole bunch of wasted time or stupid filler. Bobby Heenan is gold, so that was enjoyable to see him acting a fool in quality filler segments. His promo for the narcissist was good, even though it seemed like he was saying narcissist wrong. Is it weird to say Yokozuna looks skinny? Holy crap, it's amazing how he got at the end of his career. And my God, did Rob Bartlett have the worst fat jokes ever. Thinking it was only funny hearing Vince and his over-the-top courtesy laugh. Also made me miss Mark Madden and his stellar commentary. I gave the show a 10 out of 10 just because of how groundbreaking it was. It was a huge gamble that absolutely paid off for the WWE. Everything about it at the time was unique and set it apart from any other wrestling program on TV.
Wait a second. What about the show was that unique, aside from the time slot? Aside from the terrible jokes?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was a gamble, folks. If this didn't work, it's not like this was putting the company out of business, but it was... It was something that, in turn, made the company a ton of money and completely changed the way... you know what? I wouldn't even say that, because this version of Raw was very different than the Raw that the company was forced to change after Nitro came along. If anything, the influence of Raw was greatly affected by Monday Nitro launching and going to Monday nights to go head-to-head with Raw,
mm-hmm.
and changing the way Monday Night Raw was programmed, because you got a lot of squash matches. And I would not say it was must-see right at the start, even though they did start to do some big angles. A few weeks after the show, they'd bring Hulk Hogan back to shoot a big angle with Money Incorporated, but... at this time, he was very different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He goes on to say here that he was 10 years old at the time, and even though I could tell that this was part of something big, as enjoyable as this hour of nostalgia was, I still stick to your hour-long podcast to tell me how bad 3 hours of present-day Raw is going to be, and keep up the great work.
We go next to Andrew McDonald, who says, this was my first time watching this episode. Like you guys, I live in Canada and ended up getting to watch Raw regularly in 1995 on TSN. For a while, though, I would watch WWF Superstars, Mania, The Action Zone, and whatever syndicated program they had on, and heard about this almost mythical place where there were more than just jobber matches on a regular basis, and things actually happened. I felt very nostalgic hearing Vince McMahon's famous line, "Welcome everyone to Monday Night Raw." I never got to hear Rob Bartlett before, but heard so many bad things about him, and in the first few minutes talking about Yokozuna's diaper, I figured out why. He just buries Yoko, and poor Vince has to try to talk about Yoko using his weight to his advantage. If Vince loses it on the announcers today, I can't imagine what he wanted to do to Rob while he was out there with him. Well, evidently nothing if he was there for 4 months. A couple observations. How did Max... Oh, stupid phone... A couple observations. How did Max Moon get an intercontinental title shot? I will say he did pretty well, though, surprisingly. I thought TNA was bad with Devon's competition, but this is ridiculous. I love Tatanka's old-school wrestling promo. That Mike Tyson sidebar was awful. The Steiners looked good, and it's amazing how different Scott looks today compared to back then. The show seemed well-organized, and they seemed to fit a good chunk in only 1 hour, and it was very simple. It wasn't like a Russo booked TNA 1 hour show where they tried to put 10 minutes of shit into a 5 pound bag. 6 out of 10 show. Rob Bartlett made it incredibly awful to listen though, and that Mike Tyson stuff was just terrible.
Brian Camacho writes, excellent choice, John and Wade, for reviewing this. I attended this show at the Manhattan Center, and I do remember this show fondly. I remember the building was red hot for this show, not to mention it was a very cold night in New York City, as they stuck Sean Mooney out there for pre-tapes. The matches on this show weren't great for today's standards, but the nostalgia appeal is there to revisit this show. Who would have thought that Raw would become the show it is today? I will forever be glad I was there to witness the beginning of Raw live and in person and give this show a 10 out of 10. I think the people that are, you know, raving about or giving this a 10 out of 10, I shouldn't say raving, it is that nostalgia factor. And maybe the fact that I never got to see this when I was young, I don't really have nostalgia for this at all. Mm-hmm. This to me was my first time ever watching this show, and mm-hmm. I'm judging it based on that. So I can't really give a passing grade to what a show would turn into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, WrestleMania 1 was very, very historic, but in terms of a wrestling show, not that great.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
We go to Dante, who says, this sure was something. Those Heenan segments are classic. Seeing the Scott Steiner of 1993 was just uncanny. And Scott Hall, say hello to the bad accent. Sad to see Max Moon come up short in the IC title match. A gimmick for the ages. Could this show be more 90s? The graphics alone easily bring you back 20 years. As much as we complain about today's format, this jobber format seems a little boring in the long run. Rob Bartlett just came and went, didn't he? I've never heard of this man. I read he was gone by April that same year. Damien Demento held on just a little bit longer. I don't know what I would have thought about this at the time, even if I was just 6 years old. But it's always a blast to see these 20 years later. A fun show. So say your prayers, take your Ico Pro, and put a headlock on hunger.
We go over to our next bit of feedback here. I remember watching this, and even though I now know what Raw would become, I thought this show sucked as a kid. I can't remember what I was expecting. However, I do remember being angry and bored out of my mind. Watching it today is different, though. I actually liked Vince on commentary and thought all the matches were decent. The venue is cool and the crowd is hot, and that always makes for a good show.
Our next piece of feedback comes from Billy Miles, who says, hey, John and Way, this is my first time ever leaving feedback, and this is also the first time I have ever seen this first episode of Raw. Going into the show, I set my expectations low, knowing that I was watching early 90s wrestling, but boy, was I surprised of how good this show was. The highlights for me was Raw only being 1 hour. Also, Macho Man and Vince on commentary, and the promo from Razor. I also liked the videos of Bobby Heenan trying to get into Raw. One of the only lowlights for me was Rob Bartlett, because I just found him so annoying. I felt that the HBK versus Max Moon match was very anticlimactic, because after hitting sweet chin music, HBK doesn't go for the pin, but instead picks Moon up for a suplex, and then pins him for the win. And where was Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair? You would think WWE would want their two biggest names on the first episode of Raw. Well, Hogan wasn't around at this time.
No, not at this point. He would come in about a month later to set up the WrestleMania.
And where was Flair?
Flair, they announced Flair would be on the following week's show.
Oh, they did.
So they just didn't put him on.
Other than that, I have few complaints. I thought the show was very good, and I give it a 6 out of 10.
It would pick up because, as I recall, the night after the 93 Royal Rumble, that's when they did a Mr. Perfect Ric Flair Loser Leaves Town match, and that was Flair's final match in the company. So they did start to build it up. They did some big things in the first year. They did I remember Shawn Michaels losing the Intercontinental title to Marty Jannetty, which I just saw. Oh, Daniel Bryan talked about it on SmackDown this past Friday during one of those Raw videos. He mentioned the Michaels-Jannetty match from that first year. We go over to Gary Mann. When both of you announced last week that you would be reviewing the first episode of Monday Night Raw, it immediately piqued my interest because I had not seen any of it before, not even a random clip or here on YouTube. The first thing that I found real interesting is that the event was held in the Manhattan Center. Must have been an incredible experience to watch WWF programming in such an intimate venue. The matches on this show were standard TV fare. I know when you watch wrestling, ridiculous things are expected. But seeing Max Moon in his ring attire for the first time, I was surprised at how ridiculous the clothes could get. Nonetheless, Moon versus Michaels was a solid match overall. Also, the often stupid antics we've all complained about since Raw went to 2 hours and soon 3 hours are still here, but just happening on while the matches are going on, such as Mike Tyson on commentary and Doink running around the crowd. Although I'll admit I found the Bobby Heenan segments pretty entertaining. Overall, I give the show a 6 out of 10 for what it was, but a 10 out of 10 for its impact on the wrestling industry. Also, as a new listener, I just want to thank both John and Wade for doing these weekly podcasts. Here's to 1,000 episodes.
How many are we at now, I wonder?
Well, we started in September of 2009, so that's we're closing in on 3 years, so we're probably in the...
We haven't really taken one break.
No, we've
never missed a week. I've taken a break, but like we've had fill-in hosts.
We're probably at around 140.
That's amazing.
That's a far cry from 1,000, though.
Oh, we're getting there. Corey Ferreira says, amazing looking back at what Raw was in the early years to what it is now. Who would have thought that this show, which started out in the Manhattan Center, would eventually tour the U.S. and fill arenas. Overall, the show was fine. Yoko continues to make the mega push he was getting at the time by squashing Coco. Shawn Michaels wrestles Max Moon in a fine match. To think 1,000 shows later that Undertaker would be the only contracted performer from the show still somehow active on the WWE roster. Also, his match with Demento sucks. Rob Bartlett was the low light of the show. He was awful as a color guy. The stuff with Heenan trying to get into the show was classic Heenan comedy. Overall, it's a fine show for the era it was from. Do you think we get Taker in the 1,000th episode of Raw?
My guess would be yes. I think they're going to pretty much call anyone and everyone for that show.
Do you think he'll be wrestling Damian Demento in the main event?
Well, Damian Demento's birthday was this past week, actually.
Wow.
On Monday.
Oh, is that right?
He's like 53 now.
I would love to see a rematch.
Well, that would be... could they redo... Oh, they can't redo the Coco Beware match. the Steiners and the Executioners, could they do that?
Probably. You could find some Executioners.
And what else?
Max
Shawn Moon. Michaels, and maybe he'll come out of retirement to fight someone under the hood.
Max
as Max Moon.
Totally. Scott Hall. You can't do a Scott Hall promo.
No, you definitely cannot.
You shouldn't.
Probably wouldn't show up for it either. All right, we continue onwards here with...
Rob Bartlett, we'll guest commentate.
Nope, we do not need Rob Bartlett at all. I would be fine, and as a play on our Cyndi Lauper discussion last week, if we brought Rob Bartlett in to make fun of, I would be fine with that. Horrendous. Okay, over here to our next bit of feedback. This was a fine show per early 90s standards, which were not that high. The Yokozuna match was a decent start to the show to keep building his monster character. The Steiners were a great team back then, and the Bulldog off the top looked great. Scott Hall looked in the best shape of his career back then, and it's sad to see where he is today. What was up with the attack on Owen Hart with the clothesline? It looked ridiculous. He was standing right in front of him, and it was really weak. HBK and Max Moon was a solid TV match. Michaels looked about 20 pounds heavier than he did in 96. Undertaker Demento was a poor main event choice. A good show looking back for nostalgic reasons. Raw. Uncut, uncooked, uncensored indeed.
Finally, from Dave Crawford, there's not much to say about this show. It's a TV episode from back when TV was very different, as they just put over the guys they were pushing and built up to the pay-per-view. Rob Bartlett gets a lot of flack, and sure, his stuff didn't fit on a wrestling show, but I'll still give the WWF praise for both trying something new and, since he got 3 months before getting dropped, giving it a fair chance to succeed. Those are both things they have lots of trouble with in 2012. For being a nice and easy watch and a fun bit of nostalgia, I'd give the show an 8 out of 10.
Wow. Well, that's certainly generous, sir. All right. Thank you to everyone for your feedback, which you can always leave for any of our shows up at lawradio.proboards.com. In addition, whenever there are shows going on live, whether it be Raw or Impact, pay-per-views, there's always a listen live thread where you can chat with other fans, as well as during the Law itself, where we're always on there as well. So lots of fun stuff going on the Law message board. And that's going to wrap us up. A shorter than usual one here. We only had a 1 hour Raw to recap, and not too much involving the first episode of Raw, but watching the show is kind of interesting to go back and watch and see what was the start point and what Raw would eventually become. Pretty much a shell of what it would eventually be and become, you know, changing Monday nights into wrestling night for fans. So a very historical show, but not the best quality show as a self-contained edition of the program.
No, not at all.
Well, we're going to come to an end here, Wei, and I did choose this one, so... you are going to get to choose our review for next week.
Well, as we head down towards the 1,000th episode of Raw, why don't we check out some other milestones in the history of...
Let's watch a good episode of Raw, if you've got one.
I was just going to go with the 500th
All
episode
right,
of Raw.
That's fine.
Was it?
I don't know. Was that good?
This was from December of 2002, and features, of course, Shawn Michaels in his last reign as world champion.
Oh, okay. Sounds good.
So, yeah, we'll take a look from December 2nd, 2002 at the Frank Irwin Center in Austin, Texas, the 500th episode of Raw.
That's going to be coming up next week, episode number 500. And this will be kind of interesting to see all the changes to Raw from 1993 to 2002.
And then we can compare all the changes from 2002 to 2012.
There are a lot of them, the biggest glaring one being an additional 60 minutes.
Oh, yes.
All right, so that's going to be coming up next week. In the meantime, we're going to be back on Friday. Well, by we, I mean myself. This week it's myself and Nate Milton reviewing Impact after you guys did a fantastic job. But as you continue your trip to Montreal, we will be watching Impact. And then coming up Sunday night, it's Canada Day, which will mean Bobby Roode joins us on The Law to chat about his TNA title run, Impact going live, and how pissed off he was the day of Bound for Glory when he was told, you're not winning the title tonight. Mm. So lots of interesting stuff coming up on The Law this Sunday, 11 Eastern with myself and Jason Agnew, and plenty of other stuff up on the website right now at liveaudiowrestling.com. I feel that we've done a lot of shows over the last week.
Oh, yeah.
And chatting a lot of MMA for you wrestling fans out there, so you can avoid those ones. And there's also a lot of wrestling stuff as well, including an interview I will recommend with Perry Saturn, where he chatted about quite a lot of where he disappeared to, a lot of his friends who have passed away, including Chris Benoit, and pretty much a lot of the drug problems he went through. So you can check that up. Check that out up at liveaudiowrestling.com and follow us on Twitter at Law Radio at Way0937. And is there anything you'd like to mention, Way?
No.
All right, then. Well, we're going to go out with some music. And, oh, my goodness. What would... You know what? I feel that we should go out with something appropriate to the time frame that we just reviewed right now. Let's go back and see what was the number one song on the Billboard 100 list in January of 1993. What were the kids listening to as Raw was hitting the air? What was the hot song? What was the Carly Rae Jepsen of January 1993? You know what it was, Way? It's this. What you can hear right now.
Oh, my
Remember
God.
Remember this?
Oh, yeah.
It goes a little bit like this. Yikes.
This brings me back.
Love you. Treat you kind.